Hello, everybody. Welcome to the RDM podcast. My name is Rabbi Daniel Malinga. My co-host, Afimani McLean, is here. You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here.
Today is unique because I'm hosting my two baby brothers.
it's like a Malinga reunion.
Yes. Raymond and Robin Malinga, who are the co-founders of Creatures Animation Studios. They are animators. They've done big things. Today, we're going to be focusing and discussing things around purpose and mastery and how to hone your craft. And gentlemen, you're very welcome.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
And we're going to go wherever the discussion takes us, all right? Mm. But I guess the first thing I want to ask us as we discuss is, what did you want to be when you grew up?
When we were younger?
Yeah, when you were younger.
Should I go first?
Yeah, go first.
Well, I've always loved storytelling. So I just knew I wanted to do something regarding storytelling, computers. I've always loved those two things. At that time, I didn't even know it was going to be animation. But when I found animation, I was like, I found my purpose. So, yeah.
So you always wanted to be an animator?
I wanted to tell stories okay. and work with computers.
Okay, so you just didn't know that's what animation.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ways it could go. It could have gone to gaming, could have gone to a lot of stuff. But like animation is where I am right now. But I'm comfortable with this medium as my way of putting what I want to put into the world, you know?
So, okay. Yeah. What about you, Robin?
Yeah, for me, initially, while I was really young, I wanted to be an actor. I don't know, Jim Carrey and
Robin Williams.
And, you know, they'll give these people this one, Eddie Murphy.
You had to be a comedian. Eh?
Do you know why he just said Eddie Murphy? Why? Because every single person, whenever they see his picture, they always.
I was about to say something about it.
It's yeah, so funny, man.
But I initially wanted to be an actor. In class, when they asked sometime, I really hated the idea. This was like P4. A teacher asked, "What do you want to become?" And then everyone, like, she went one by one. And people were saying, "Lawyer, doctor, lawyer, doctor, lawyer, yeah, doctor." Yeah. So when it came to me, I just said, "I want to be a father." And the teacher translated it as father, like from the church. But actually, I just wanted to be a father.
Like Catholic priest.
Yeah, but I meant like a father, like dad. With the children. But very much so, as you grow older, what you want to be keeps changing. So I went from actor, and I've always been writing since I was young. You guys know I was writing in those little books. And so very much so, storytelling is also something that I was like, I just want to tell stories. And I wanted to write. I thought it was about novels and stuff. But here we're in animation, and it's more like a medium through which I'm telling stories.
What about you, Afi?
I think for me, it would just be business, successful businessman, but I want to use that. It's what I always wanted, but I want to use that to be able to shift people's paradigms, because that's really where my strong suit is, okay? Shifting people's mindsets to think a certain kind of way. So for me, that's it. But I use the business angle, you know, to approach it. I mean, because then from the results and from the knowledge and from the experience and stuff like that, you have people who look up to you. And then by the time they come to you, they're coming to you because of something. So they want to drink off your cup. So you need to have something to pour into their cups. You know. So for me, that's it.
You know, you guys are amazing because I wanted to be an FBI agent.
In many ways, you are.
I wanted to be an FBI agent. So you can see how far off the cliff I've fallen, eh? I really want to be an FBI agent. So the reason why
first hold up. Why did you want to be an FBI agent?
So when we were growing up, we used to watch a lot.
Yeah, we know, but you tell everybody else. Quite.
They just, you know, when they make these movies and, you know, you flash the badge, eh? With FBI. Nice.
It always felt cool.
Guys, this is actually a true story, man. This guy was obsessed with this police detectives and stuff.
Yeah. So I always wanted to be that, and
I get it now. Yeah. The detective thing with mystery.
Yes.
Makes sense.
That's what I'm saying. Like in many ways, he is. That's why I said that. You know.
Nice.
So I really wanted to do that, but you guys are saying I'm doing it in some way.
Yeah.
I'm far from being an FBI agent. Okay. But so
an RDM agent.
RDM agent. Mm.
I like that.
There are a lot of things. There are a lot of things that have shaped each and every one of us, and made us who we are at this very point. Mm. Did you think that a number of years from now, I mean a number of years from then, you'd be where you are at this moment in time? And that's linked to the previous question.
Mm. I'll go first. I'll say that there's hope that you would, you know. And I tend to, Robin and I, funny enough, like Robin talked about the story, he used to write stories in at home, you know, and we all know those stories. What he didn't know is that I was also writing, but the family didn't know. So that's actually how we bonded, you know. He found out that I was writing in my room and he was like, wait, you're writing? Then we just started talking. And you start imagining and projecting yourself forward and saying the possibilities, you discuss the possibilities. So in a way, we hoped we would, or I hoped we would. And yeah, and I think that that's very important, you know. It's very important to project yourself forward, you know, because that's what gives you the energy to keep on.
So is that the same thing as vision?
Yes, I think it is. You know, you have to have that vision. I think it's that in many ways, I'm just explaining that word vision. I'm trying to break it down. When somebody says you must have vision, you know, I think that's one way to put it. You know, project yourself forward, and it's like almost like a self-motivation tactic. You know, if you can see yourself on a podcast with RDM, you know, right? Start envisioning that. You know, start saying, if I was on that podcast, what would I say? You know,
in many ways, it's like putting forward objectives and goals, and you look at yourself in the future. You're like, because as a child you think about things in a very childish way, and as a child thinking that I'm going to tell stories, I'm looking at J.K. Rowling writing Harry Potter and I'm like, I'm going to be better than J.K. Rowling, which is nice to have. When you get older and you start having more aligned, more intentional views and goals, you start now putting pins that you're like, it seems inconceivable, but I can probably work hard enough to get there.
But where did you guys get that mindset from? Was it in school? Because there are a lot of people that have gone to school and there are people out there who think, okay, we have a disadvantage because not only are we in Africa, we're in Uganda. And from off the bat, some people think we've started off with a disadvantage. Okay, and here you are. You guys are talking about from the time that you were young, you had some sort of vision. Where on earth did you get that from? Where was that drive coming from?
The ambition, man. I don't know. For me personally, I think in my mind, I was always just like, if not me, how? Like you see another person doing it. They're only human beings, and in many ways, I don't see any difference between myself and, you know, Steven Spielberg. I'm like, if he could do it, he's only a human. Yes, there are other factors around, but then it just means that you just have to work harder than him. And that's what you keep on looking forward and trying to do it.
So you don't think place can be a disadvantage?
I think that you have to consider the factors that are surrounding you and the factors that someone else had, you know? And when you compare those two things, you have to go about it your way, considering your factors.
Yeah.
You know? And so to answer your question directly, because I do not want to minimize the idea that somebody's location and where they are cannot affect their ability to get something, you know? But I will also say that to answer your question, right? I'm adding on to what I'm saying, answering your question. I think it's an incredible amount of self-awareness, you know? Being aware that of your conditions, where you are, accepting that that is a reality, and making sure that you do not let that get in the way, right? So for me, it's just curiosity, self-awareness, and just craving information, you know? I'm more interested in how Steven Spielberg or J.K. Rowling got to where they got to, because the more people you listen to, and you hear about their stories, the more you realize that everyone has a different story. And that means that yours is also valid too.
But I notice, because I'm going to bring in Maki here.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a bachelor's degree in economics. Again, so I I'm into ministry now, okay? How many of us here actually from school are doing what we studied? Maki.
Yeah, I think I'm there because I also have a degree in economics as well. Also an economist. So for me, the business part falls in. You know, it makes sense. But like I'm saying, if you were to ask me, when all is said and done, what would I say I did and I'm proud of. It would actually be inspiring people, being able to uplift people through their mindsets, you know, and which brings me to answer the question that you asked. All right. And for me, I think it's the perception. Perception matters. Okay, you can be in an environment, but the way you look at things matters. So I usually tell people, see, you have two ways of looking at something that is not right or doesn't feel right to you, okay? And the two words are problem or challenge. If you decide to look at something as a problem, you've already created a mental wall around, you understand? A blockade. So now you can't think outside the box. You're now in panic mode. You're demotivated and everything. If you look at that same issue as a challenge, it's different. The way you approach it is different. So there's some energy that you have to overcome this challenge. It's different from when you look at it as a problem. So when it comes to environment, for example, where you're placed, okay, you don't have the best. You don't have everything that you need. You don't have the state of the art kind of stuff. But what do you have? What can you do with it? Can you be creative with it? You understand? Because the people that we see who have achieved, none of them started with state of the art or started with the very best. They all started from somewhere. But because we see them now as, you know, the epitome of society, we think, oh, maybe at some point they didn't go through the same challenges. Everyone went through almost the same thing. It was just how you decided to look at it. And then Raymond mentioned something very interesting. Who you listen to, you know, what you surround yourself with, what you feed yourself with. You know, I love reading books a lot. And I learned a long time ago that it was the fastest way for me to gather a lot of information and knowledge and build my intelligence, you know, and stuff like that. So that even when something presents itself, my mind is not so myopic in terms of how far I can see options and opportunities. You know, I can see a whole array of ways to approach it. Why? Because I fed my mind something. You know, I taught myself something, either through reading or listening to other people or sitting under someone, you know.
Okay, well, in line with that, because I asked, did you?
So
what you studied?
So I studied business administration. But as you know, it's not, I wanted to study animation, but yes. I wasn't able to study animation due to
financial constraints.
And for a while there, at the moment in time, it actually hurt me. And when I started out my course, I was bitter about it. I was like, but this is not what I want to do. And, you know, but, you know, we had conversations with Raymond while he was in Malaysia. And, you know, we're talking on Facebook chat, Messenger. What was it at the time?
Messenger.
As the
Messenger is today. It was like Facebook chat.
Inbox.
So we're chatting and, you know, because we... You know, the plan was to set up the company anyway. And today, in many ways, what I studied, you know, it gave me new purpose in terms of what I was studying. Mm-hmm. Like, so it was good to know that we're going to set up the company. And I was like, you know, we do need somebody who understands the ongoings of how the business is going.
Yep.
And so it changed my outlook on the course. And I actually started really doing well because the course became super easy for me. Because while I'm in class and I'm listening, all I'm doing is thinking of how I would apply it in this scenario.
Correct. Mm.
So when I'm going for exams, I'm just like, man, this is what I would do. And so you pass, you know.
We're going to go into the details about the company.
What
you studied is what you...
Yeah, so for me, I was first studying computer science. Then I got the opportunity to go and do animation and visual effects in Malaysia. So in many ways, what I did study... is what I'm doing right now. And my perspective is like, I feel like I'm incredibly fortunate that I got that opportunity to do it. But the thing is, what people don't know is that when I went there, I couldn't draw. I couldn't do a lot of things. But what I went in with was a love for writing and an incredible amount of intention. So me and Robin and I were corresponding throughout my whole tenure in Malaysia.
And you know, the reason I brought up this question is because we grew up in the same household, but generally our household is not much different from many, maybe Ugandan households. Mm. Parents tend to have a vision for their children.
Yeah.
Okay. And they'll tell you, do this course. Mm. You want to be a lawyer? No. Lawyers make money. Mm. On my part, dad is an economist, so so I ended up going into economics.
Everybody was an economist. Like the first few guys like in the household, all of them were just supposed to be into economics.
I think we need to point out that Daniel is the first born.
Yeah.
And then there's Ronald, who is the second born, who is not here. And there's Raymond, then there's me. Yeah. So you see Daniel goes, he's like economist.
Ronald was
an economist as well. Eh?
Yeah.
So if dad had his way, I think all of us would have been economists.
Well, what's interesting is like how comfortable they've become with the outcome now. You know, I have to give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
Because like there are a lot of parents that would even up to now, you know, still be fighting, you know, right? And I know like dad had lingered for a while, you know, but then like I think he has kind of like settled in and said, you know what, it's okay that Daniel is like this. Robin's like this. And I give them credit because a lot of parents don't, you know.
I remember he say, you want to make cartoons? And it was very hard for him to imagine how someone can make money
making cartoons.
Do you were your parents like that?
No, and fortunately for me, my mom was, I was literally raised by a single mom. So I lost my dad when I was 5 years old. So I literally never knew him. So I was raised by my mom. And for her, it was just the whole idea of you guys need to make it in life. It was not take this path, take that path. It was just make something out of yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because you only have yourselves. So whatever you do, do it with a point of you need to be successful. And for me, that was the driving force.
Nice.
Where do you guys draw the line between
good attitude,
between talent and actually pushing to learn a craft? Is talent enough?
I don't know. This thing of like what is talent, you know? I would be curious to hear what you guys think about that question.
So for me, I think like it's a combination of the two. There are talented people who have gone the long way, but then there are also talented people who you see falling off because of really crazy reasons. You can be the most talented singer in the world, but if you don't put the work in, like nobody hears you. You never put out a song, but you're the greatest bathroom singer. You might have a voice better than Mariah Carey. So what about the talent?
Yeah.
You know.
Mm.
So I feel like, you know, on our team we have a number of talented individuals, and I'm in awe every day of the artists that we have and how they're working, because they can do amazing things that I can't do and Raymond can't do. But in the end, it's like together is how the only way that an animation can come together is by putting all those talents together and having the correct mindset. You know, there are people who have been talented individuals and had to leave our team because of mindset. You know,
it's talent. Interesting.
I value mindset over
talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
Because the thing is that if a person puts their mind to something, they can go above talent.
Mm-hmm.
They can, you know? And that's the thing. Like, I was in school, you know, university, and these are conversations I had with dad, but you guys probably didn't know. But it was just the mindset that he put me in, the space that he put me in when I was going to Malaysia was like, because I really wanted to go to the USA, right? Because that's where all the movies are made, you know? And man, it was too expensive. And he told me like, you know, if you're really serious about it, anywhere you go, you'll succeed. You know, you succeed. And I went in with that mindset. So when I came in, you know, you have to think about it. I'd started 1 year in Makere doing computer science. Then when I decided to go and do animation visual effects, I'm pretty much like older than most of the people in the class. Because like I've started again, you know, and all these kids are like really talented, you know. And the thing is, I just went in with the mindset of if I really put my mind to it, you know, I can go above all of these guys, you know? And I think that's what you need, you know? A great mindset is what you need, you know? And even for a talented person, if you do not have the right mindset, I think you can just, you can go forgotten, you know?
And Maki?
I think I would say, for me, talent would be the foundation. It's the initial deposit, basically.
Mm.
It's the one thing you're going to have. No one is going to take it away from you. You understand?
Mm.
But then the question you need to ask yourself is, how far do you want to grow this? Because then when you ask the question of how far you want to grow it is now when all these other things that we're mentioning come in. You understand? Because we know people who are talented, but they didn't put in the extra time. They didn't want to sit under a mentor. They didn't want to do apprenticeship. You know, they didn't have discipline. Their social intelligence was off and everything. And at the end of the day, all of that summed up, you had talent, but you didn't go very far with it. Mm. Then you have someone who has talent, but they understand that this is just the basic. Because you asked at first, what is talent? For me, talent would be the inherent gift that you have. That's why I'm saying you have it. No one can take it away from you. You know, but I like what you said in terms of the mindset. You know, anyone can ideally do anything if you set your mind to it. Why? Because every human being has a will, and your willpower is very strong. So if you channel that energy in the right direction, you can actually do it, which is literally what you did. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure very many people who have seen your works, like me, I didn't know that part, that by the time you went to Malaysia, you couldn't even draw. But do you know how many people...
I could draw, but very badly.
Okay. The stick figures.
Yeah.
Okay. But how many people actually just stop at that point and get discouraged and feel like, okay, I can't draw. Yeah. Like, I'm going to go all the way the other side. And then what if I look like a fool and all these things? And then you don't do anything about it, you know? Mm. But because you had something inherent, you had an intuition inside you, something that kept pushing you, like what you're saying. When you're younger, there was always something. You always felt, I can stand out in the crowd. Mm. If that guy can do it, I can do it. Because for me, like personally, I always felt like a bigger audience. Like, I need to reach out to much more. Like, I felt that the wisdom that I have can enrich and can benefit much more than the people who are just in our household and who are around me. So for me, it was always, how do you get out there? How do you get the voice out there? How do you get out there, you know?
Okay, so we've laid a foundation for that, but now I want to focus on your company, okay? Creatures Animation Studios. You're going to tell us how you came up with that name. But the question I want to ask, I've always wanted to ask, we were a number of people who grew up in the same house. How many people were we? I don't remember. We were so many. Because mom and dad were taking care of other kids as well.
Seven, eight?
Yeah.
Extended family.
My question to you is, when you're starting your company, why Robin? Why not me? Why not Ronald? Why him?
I think I've never actually... Good question, you know? For me, it's just that Robin and I did have similarities already in the household, which happened naturally. They were not forced. You know, we already loved storytelling. We watched so many animes together, you know, right? And that's something that I was not necessarily, because like you would watch like an anime episode.
I loved Bleach.
You would watch Bleach episodes alone.
Mm.
Ronald would watch them alone, but me and Robin would watch them together, you know? And I think that it just became natural. I've never really thought about it. It just happened, you know? And it just
so it
made...
It wasn't a planned thing.
I don't know.
At a certain point, it kind of did become planned. Because especially around the time when you were going to study, when you were going to study animation, it kind of became planned. Because initially, we started out by having our writing sessions or whatever, storytelling sessions in the Harry Potter room. The room that we call the Harry Potter room under the stairs.
Okay.
In that room.
Yeah.
So we used to go and we would exchange stories and what, but there was no real point to it. It was just for the sake of stories.
Dreaming,
anyway. And wouldn't it be cool if this story was what?
Did you guys try to do comics or something like that?
I think we were writing
more than comics.
Yeah, because like I think I have like an unreasonable amount of notebooks that have like just chapters and paragraphs of stories.
Yeah.
And Robin also has that. And I used to read some of his stuff. He used to read some of my stuff. And this is secret because you guys don't know this.
Yeah.
This is
the whole time that he was in Malaysia, because we had been having that session, it continued on Facebook inbox. Like I would come, even when I was at school, like I would use my computer class time to update Raymond on where my story is.
Yeah.
And then he would...
It was very interesting.
And you know what's interesting is that... He, after Raymond had finished his course, was it after he had finished? Robin said he wanted to do the same course.
Yes.
And Ronald and I thought, he's just trying to...
No, you know? It came from very far away.
We didn't know that there was a backstory to it. We thought he was just trying to copy because...
And that's the interesting thing about siblings, you know? Like, we have different relationships with each other. And like, you know, you take it for granted that because Robin and I have been talking for such a long time, it didn't occur to me that you guys didn't even know. You know?
these guys came at me. It wasn't even when his course was done. It was while he was still there,
last,
and I was
last born problem.
Yes,
yeah, it's really last born problem.
I discouraged mom and dad. I was like, no, Judo can put money on this guy to do animation when he has no clue what he wants to do, so he's just looked at the next guy.
Mm-hmm. No, but that wasn't.
That's
it.
What
like,
we thought,
and that's the thing. I think like it's interesting because like Robin's story, I keep on telling people like Robin has his own interesting story here, because like a lot of people don't even know what we've just said. This is probably the first time we've mentioned it like, in this full detail, you know. And the thing is, the whole time I was in Malaysia, it was like Robin sends us something, I also send him a story back, you know. He reads it, you know. And the thing is, I was trying my best to make sure that he knew. What was involved in an animation course, you know? So I'd send him stuff. I think I even came back with a lot of my lecture slides, you know, right?
And you read them?
No, I think we've shared with some of them.
I mean, I looked through some things, but, you know, it's not the same as... It's like receiving handouts from school. It's not the same as being in the school.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, like very much so along the journey, like I said... Because I felt like just because I didn't do animation didn't mean it meant my storytelling journey had died.
Yeah.
And so I started focusing more on it. And even up to today, I'm the only part of the Creatures animation team that doesn't animate. You know, I'm there for story. I'm there for line production. I'm there for, you know, the way the business works.
You're going to tell us what line production is. And before I bring in Maki. But so how did you come up with the name Creatures? Why Creatures?
It's actually strange because we are actively going to change that.
Yeah.
I don't know if we should mention that here. Is this no, not yet. Right. But the thing is that it takes a long time for a company to find its purpose.
Mm.
Very long time. Mm-hmm. And talking to different company owners, I've realized that the culture of your company, the name of your company, how that seeps into everybody who works with you, right? It takes a while to really understand what that is, you know? And we have recently discovered what that is. So we are changing our name. But initially, Creatures came... It's funny. It's like the name Creatures came up because we were thinking about individuals that think differently back then, you know? And we're saying like these weird creatures who don't really...
Okay.
like that. That's where that name came from. And it's funny. It came from... back then, Robin wasn't even part of the company. It started with Gabriel Mundaka. So Gabriel was
our cousin.
Your cousin Gabriel, you know. So we started the company with Gabriel before I left Malaysia, before I left for Malaysia, and that was the idea, right? But then along the way, I think obviously as things happen, I think Gabriel wanted to focus more on live action, documentaries, things like that. Mm. And I was really super focused on animation and I'd been talking to Robin. The plan was always to have Robin part of the company. So when I came back, it's like Creatures 2.0. So what people usually talk to us about is actually Creatures 2.0, which is with Robin, right? Starting from 2015. And the one that was there before, we didn't really do many projects, you know, with that. We did like anonymous. That was the only thing I think we did, you know. But like,
okay.
Yeah, like, but the name came from, so the idea is, funny enough, like what we're talking about, like people who have the different mindset, who are thinking differently, you know. So the spirit of what we want to do has always been the same.
Okay.
So now we're moving on to something else now.
Okay. Maki, you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question about that because... I watched one of your interviews out of the several where you talked about when you started out in the garage.
Yep.
And I'd like you to just share that story because I know the most famous garage startups that people know about.
What is that?
Apple.
Apple,
actually,
exactly.
People say that
Steve Jobs.
Was Microsoft as well in the garage?
Yes. Yeah. Most of them were in a garage. So is it something to do with computers, with the garage startups?
To be honest with you, it's just the parents weren't using the garage, and I said, "Can I? we actually didn't start in the garage. We started in the boys' quarters.
Yeah,
in
our right?
Yeah, in a room.
Yeah, but the garage ended up being your room, right?
Yeah. Dan, don't say that.
All right. No, go on.
Okay, anyway, the truth is, like, I spent a lot of nights in that garage, yes, you know. Yeah. Just trying to figure... Robin, why are you laughing? Because Robin didn't sleep. Yeah. He slept there. Robin was in his bed. You know?
I've just realized that this guy has the potential to really give us the
No, we also have the potential to. Okay. So, we can make it a little bit more siblingy here, you know. But the thing is, it wasn't like, oh, let's start in a garage because this guy started in the garage.
Yeah.
We started in the room under the stairs a long time ago. Then we shifted to the boys' quarters. And then we went to a garage. Yeah. But the garage is... the reason why we usually say we started off in a garage is because that's when the team started forming. Yeah. We started inviting people to join us there, to work with us.
And in line with that, so you got a number of people to work for you guys, to join the company.
Mm.
You're going to tell me, like, what criteria did you use to choose those people? And in line with that... does your company have a culture, and how was that culture determined?
I think I don't know. Do you want me to take this?
No, you go ahead. Because in terms of the first people who came on, you're the one who found them.
Yeah. So then you talk on the culture.
Yeah.
So for me, I came in knowing that not everyone is going to be fortunate enough to have gone to study animation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that what I was looking for in Uganda was not only people who had some skill, but people who had the correct mindset, who are crazy enough to say, there's no reason why we can't make a short film, or we can't do a film, or we can't have a successful animation studio. I would actually want them to be interviewed, you know, those guys, because I want to know what they were thinking. Because sometimes I look back and say, I know I was crazy, but I think...
Were you paying them? Crazy. At that time, right? You weren't paying them.
No. Yeah. So the thing is this, most of them, we were not paying them in the beginning. No, the noodles came later, Robin. I'm going to get there, right? In the beginning, it was just, I think we were looking at it, and I think their parents as well were looking at it as an opportunity to use some of the skills they had, right? And this was more of like a training thing. I think they were looking at it that way. But then the intent was always to give, to create a company that actually produces something and we can pay them, you know? So I was under that pressure always to figure out how do I pay. And actually, in the beginning, if someone told me, like, oh, I don't have transportation, stuff like that, I was actually putting some money that I had saved up to just help, you know. And then the noodles came in, the plastic plates. Remember those plastic
plates?
What's
this noodles thing? What's that?
So, we're basically paying guys with noodles. I feel
free lunch. Okay, here's the thing. We're not paying them. Let's first rephrase this.
No, because so we're not paying them.
Guys used to come and they used to just work. Then we started saying, you know what? Guys are working the whole day. Let's start giving them lunch. But we couldn't afford anything. But those noodle packs, bro, they taste good, you know?
And there was a sale at the supermarket. I don't know if you remember that at Tuskegee.
Don't say these things.
It's way back, man.
I just remember there's a particular guy who just used to like eating it a lot.
The noodles. I don't know. We're not going to name drop.
what did he look like?
The light skinned guy with
So we're just going to like
okay. And the culture, because I'm going to bring in Maki again.
Also, so initially, now it's actually very interesting because when we in 2015 when the company had started, I was reading up a lot about companies and how they are, and then there's company culture, and I was like, oh, company culture is gonna be this and that. But then you start to realize very quickly that you can't control what it is. It's controlled. The culture comes, it just appears with the people that are on the team, and things start to happen. So
including ourselves,
yeah. You know, so in our company, but what aspect of culture? Because I feel like it's broad. I can talk about the fact that, you know, on Fridays we have team talks. And now that's part of our culture.
I would say, like, in just the company culture right now is we are very aware of our position. We're very aware of the environment that's surrounding us. But we're not letting that stop us, you know? So right now everyone works with this idea that let's prove some things can be done. You know, that's
very much so. Like when if you're to come to the animation, Creatures Animation Studio right now, the energy in the room is guys just want to work, man. Guys are there working more hours than we ask them to. Guys are there on weekends, happily smiling. Like, they just want to push and get better. And the idea is we're failing fast, you know.
And forward.
And forward. So, especially this year in particular, we started having this attitude of, let's get all the nonsense out of the way. You know, I'm happy at work when we discover something wrong. Mm. Because it's now, we have discovered it and it must never happen again. And it's gone.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It's like when you take a step back, like us, take a step back and actually look at the team and how they're functioning. You're like, I don't even know when this started happening, you know? But like, Robin talks about this year, but in a way it was kind of always there, you know? And it does come from, I think, the founders first, right? Which is, Robin is 5 years my younger. But Robin's opinion is just as valuable as anyone else's opinion, right? And if someone in the studio is trying to minimize someone else's opinion, right? I just have a tendency of saying, we don't do that here, you know, right? So I listen to people, like my job is to make decisions, right? But then I make informed decisions. So a lot of times I have to go and talk to Robin, right? And I encourage talking. I think the other thing that we have in our company is that everyone talks to everybody and we don't mise information. I actually get very frustrated when someone is sitting on information that could have solved our problem. And I'm like, why didn't you talk about this?
So you're very family-oriented, you think?
Family-oriented? I don't know. It's funny because the thing is this. I don't want to force people to have those things. Let's go for a company retreat, you know? Like that, you know, there are those ones that are fake, you know, right? Usually it's even the team that tells me, yo, Raymond, we have started doing this thing where we have quotes every single week, right? And I'm like, what's this quote thing? I don't even know. But they're the ones who kind of organize that. You know, they say, yo, man, we should go and do a futsal, which we still have to do. But the futsal thing where we compete. And it comes from them, you know? Mm. And I think that's what Robin's saying, like the people generally. So I don't know if it's like family, because somebody goes and does his own thing and I have no idea what he's doing in his free time, but I don't force everyone to.
I like that. So basically what I'm picking up from you guys is having a spirit and an environment where iron sharpens iron.
Okay.
You understand? Mm-hmm. Like where you have the right people around you. You didn't even know at first that you had these kind of people around you, but as time goes on, you start to discover, actually don't need to push these guys to do it. Like, it's coming from within. Like, everybody feels a part of this thing. They're all sold to your vision. You understand? And that's the power of vision. That's actually the power of knowing exactly. And this is why I believe when we're looking out for guests, Rabbi suggested you guys, because these are the things that you see with people who are operating from a place of mastery. That there are certain things that they have done that even without them doing much, it will draw the right people around them, and it creates an enabling environment. Now, I just wanted to add a block to that, which is also just a question. How did you guys, or how are you dealing with, it can be past and present, how did you deal with public pressure in terms of expectations? You understand? Because you're saying you're not paying these guys and stuff like that. And so to be sold to this vision that you had, even when it wasn't yet making the money and the environment was not the most conducive, how did you deal with all of that?
I think like the way I'm going to answer this question is that I'm going to say that in many ways we're always ahead of the public.
Yeah.
You know? And when we were dreaming up a Kalabanda Ate My Homework, no one was thinking about it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So by the time Kalabanda Ate My Homework comes out, we've lived with it for like 2 years. You know? Mm-hmm. So when the pressure is, so we are putting ourselves on pressure, right? Then the public starts putting us on pressure after Kalabanda has come out, but we're on pressure about something else now. You know?
Very much intentionally, actually, from the beginning, before Kalabanda Ate My Homework, before we released it, we had a conversation about the fact that we had to know what we were going to do next before the audience saw it, because there was going to be public pressure.
Yes. Yep. Actually, that's a good thing to add.
Yeah.
I have a question in line with that, because now we're talking about the content that you brought out. Creatures has won a number of awards because of your very first release, which was
Kalabanda
Ate My Homework. And if you haven't watched it, please take time to watch it. It's about eight minutes long.
Six.
It's six minutes. And how long did it take to make it?
I like to answer this question with it. It took 2 years to make a color bandit my homework, but it also took 2 years to form a team.
That's why I will never go into animation.
What?
2 years for six minutes.
No, Daniel, like the thing is that, think about it this way. If you have to, it's incredible self-awareness. You understand that we are an industry in its infancy. Mm. I recognize that, you know? And it is difficult to be a pioneer. That's why many people don't do it. Mm. There's going to be a point in time where animation is going to be so easy for people. It's going to be normal, you know? I mean, like, not easy in terms of to do, but so many people are doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. That they're going to look back and say, we took 6 minutes, 2 years, 6 minutes. But this year, we've done how many minutes? In the year hasn't even ended. We're on episode 9. Yeah. 8, 9.
We're doing a show called Kunda and Friends, which is on YouTube, and it's
kids
show. It's a kid and show. We're pushing out like an episode a month.
So yeah. It's Africa's Cocomelon.
Like that. We say it is. I think it's time that from a very young age, what appealed to me to this to do this project was like, if we want to really impact, you know, our people, you know. Mm. Or people who look like us all over the world. I think it needs to start from a really young age, because if like a kid is consuming different kind of content, you know, and not seeing themselves, there's going to be an age where they reach and they cannot like
it's not relatable.
Yeah, and you're trying to now you start trying to remove all that trauma. Or I wouldn't call it trauma, rather it's like the influence they've had ever since they were young. So I like Kunda and Friends because when I see your daughter, we see Jasmine, our niece, right, dancing and singing Kunda and Friends, she doesn't know how lucky she is that she gets to see black kids, right?
Yeah, we grew up. Every cartoon was well. I remember a time. I don't know if you remember this, when I came to you and I asked you to do an animation for my ministry.
Yeah,
and I now think at how silly I was, because you don't remember the answer you gave me.
You remind me
every second in animation counts. Eh? Mm. Okay, so you asked me, how long do you want? I was like, about 20 minutes. Like, 20 minutes?
No, by the way, guys, you have to understand that this was before
Color
Bandit My Homework had come out.
Yes. Mm.
So, man, bless his heart, right? Bless his heart and his soul, right? And I think I answered it like very, I didn't shout. Mm. I didn't say whatever. I just told him, stupid.
20 minutes, you know, and Color Bandit My Homework is six minutes. But you've won awards. Can you just mention the awards that you've won? The most notable is the Cannes.
Yeah, so with the Short Film Corner Cannes Film Festival, I always get the year wrong, Robin. Say the correct year. 2018. Yes. He told me, Raymond, you should stop saying the wrong year. You keep saying the wrong year. So 2018, the Cannes Film Festival, which is the largest film festival in the world.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. I got to go there with Robin. We got a cool John Travolta photo there. It has, it's its own other story, you know? So we've won that. We won a FRIF in Nigeria. I think we've won in total like maybe 7.
Nice.
Just for Color Bandit.
And it has been global. It hasn't been just Africa. Ironically, we didn't get the Uganda Award until when? Last year?
Can you imagine?
Okay.
Yeah, last year we got an Uganda Award.
But can I ask, in line with that? Okay, so you've won awards for Color Bandit My Homework. It took 2 years. It was in a garage. I witnessed you guys working in that place. Sometimes Raymond was sleepless the entire night. But if you could go back, are there things about Color Bandit that you would change? In terms of how it appears now,
I think like, okay, so here's the thing. Whenever a project is done, like at least in the case of our studio, I always try to name what we want its objective to be early on. Mm. You know, I go in with that mindset. So I think Color Bandit did exactly what it needed to do, right? But what I would have changed is that we would have done it earlier. That's the only thing I would have changed. Because the whole of 2015, we were trying to be a studio that we were not. Mm. You know? We were trying to do commercials, ads, graphic design, posters, and all this.
And there are a lot of people in that area.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Robin and saying, like, I don't know if I said this directly to him, but my mindset was this: I need a project that will help us leapfrog everybody. Yeah. Everybody in one single bound, you just leapfrog everyone, right? And I said, I remember the parameters for doing Color Bandit My Homework were, it cannot be shorter than a minute.
That's a clip.
It can't. It cannot be something people pass around on WhatsApp at that time, because that's how people are associating animation. We wanted to create something.
A film.
That somebody would say, I would watch that in the cinema. And so what we're trying to do is that we're trying to get our audience and get several audiences used to watching our things in a place that can generate an industry, like their income and all that stuff. Because like people are so used to watching Avengers in the cinema, but they're used to watching a Ugandan clip on WhatsApp, you know? But if there's something this large, this scale, like they're like, wow, I would watch that in the cinema, and that's great, you know? So I think we would have done it earlier. Robin was good.
To answer the same question about whether I would change anything, for the content itself, the film itself, I wouldn't change anything. Every time that it plays today, Raymond and I, like, I know we can't watch it. not in a place of shame, but like,
I understand that anyone was done their work doesn't.
I, if it's playing in a room that you've been invited, I usually have to walk out. But I love what it did. It served its purpose, like Raymond said, and
it was a stepping stone.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's a moment in time that I appreciate. I appreciate it for what it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love this story, by the way. I love this story. It's very inspiring, you know, listening to your story, because I know I'm going to share it with a lot of people as well. Mm-hmm. And just from what you guys are sharing, based on the question that he asked, what I picked out was the sacrifices you guys have had to make. You understand? To be able to be in that place of mastery. And that's where you zoned down and said, you know what? All this other work, you know, printing this, designing this, and doing that and doing that. Let's push all of that aside and just focus on this one thing.
Mm.
Even when these other smalling or seemingly small things were bringing in instant gratification, correct? Mm. But you chose to focus on this one thing, that even if it's going to take us 2 years to do it, we're going to put our all in it, that at the end of the day, when it comes out, it's something that we will be proud of.
Mm.
So it first started with you guys. You sold yourself. You sold your visions to yourselves.
Mm.
You bought into it, and then you understood that sacrifices are going to have to be made. Mm. So I just want you guys to talk about that, because part of the reason, the main reason of actually this podcast is just to help someone out there who is having a challenge with understanding what we mean by attaining mastery in your craft, and what it would take for you to be able to attain mastery, and the things that come with it. Because, you know, someone can sit now, look at you guys and say, oh, I think that's nice. Then tomorrow they're going to start.
Mm.
And then they'll feel hungry and say, you know what? I think this is not paying off, man. I've been at this thing like for 4 months, 6 months. Like, no one is giving me any likes on Facebook, on my Instagram.
Mm.
No following. Like, I only have five people. You understand?
You brought in actually something very interesting, because what he's asking is, tell us about your sacrifices. Eh?
Mm.
But in line with that, I know a story or two. Some of the challenges that you've had, I want us to touch that, then we'll go into what he was talking about at the end. There are people who have come in to try to buy your company.
Mm. We won't mention them.
Yeah, won't mention them, yes. They've come and they've offered you some hefty amount of money. Why not take it?
Because my simple answer is it's kind of, okay, here's the thing. Something that I've learned recently, right, is that money is very important. I know money is important. I've always known that. But what's even more important than that is the people you work with. So if you get the wrong investor, you know, even if they come in with a lot of money, very quickly your company is going to start breaking, you know. And I think why we weren't taking some of these deals wasn't because we didn't need money. It was mostly because that person just wasn't the right person for us. And it could be a right person for someone else, but just not for us, you know? So we've gotten the really bad ones, right? We've gotten the ones that are very enticing. But then you're like, I think we know what... We're still on a journey.
And we're talking about big money here, right?
Because like, imagine, you know, we've just talked about the fact that the first year was the company that we were not... We're trying to focus on ads and commercials. Fast forward, after Calabanda Ate My Homework, somebody comes and offers you, man, I want to invest in you guys. Do you know I can get you all these commercials?
And
all
ads.
These ads. Mm. I have connections to all of the big companies.
And that's not your vision.
And that's not your vision. And that's what the problem is.
And Yeah, and you should always ask investors like what their vision is, you know.
Yep.
Sometimes they come in saying, like, you pitch to me because you want money. Ma'am, like, you pitch to me because are you the right person for me, you know? And that's just the attitude. And you have to be really, really strong, because sometimes these people come in, eh? When those noodles have come back, eh? Right? And you're like, bro, man, I don't know, right?
But in line, because that's a sacrifice. Those are sacrifices you've had to make, eh?
Yes.
But there's something you said, because I want to touch a number of things that I think people will help a number of people. What does it take to get into Disney, to work for Disney? Because you specifically, okay, so you've been working with Disney on your project Chizazi Moto, which means
Generation
of Fire.
Yeah.
So a group of Africans came together.
I'll explain.
And you explain. Okay. Now, just for so many animators out there who want to go to the big league, what does it take?
The big league for now.
Yes. What does it take to work for Disney? Because I remember when you released A Calabanda Ate My Homework, it had just a handful of subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How on earth did you get in touch with Disney, or did Disney get in touch with you? And what was the next step?
I'm going to summarize this story, right?
Yeah.
I know I'm trying to help somebody, but I'm going to summarize the story because we don't have a lot of time. What I will say is that I attribute everything that has happened to A Calabanda Ate My Homework. The decision to do that film is the single best decision I think I've ever made.
I thought you were going to say you attributed to God, but then we'll get to that. Okay, go ahead.
We had gone so far without bringing this in, you know?
All right.
We were doing so well, you know? So A Calabanda Ate My Homework. And the thing is that when I was on the award circuit, Robin didn't travel as much as I did, but then I did travel around. And I think just talking, having conversations with people, it eventually led me to go to Cape Town. I was invited as a speaker at the Cape Town International Film Festival in 2019, and I met all these big players, you know, the Disney people there, Sony Pictures, DreamWorks. I met Peter Ramsey there. I met the Triggerfish team there. And that's not where, like, the deals of Chizazi Moto were signed. You know, they're like, you signed this deal. It wasn't that. It's like, I just talked to people. I told them what I'm trying to do. And I was just really networking, you know, and there were rumors about trying to do something for Africa, you know. And I was like, I don't know if they're going to call me, you know. But I said, if these people can remember me, if they can check out Calabanda Ate My Homework, they'll probably remember me at some point. So when emails came out and they said, Raymond, we're inviting you to pitch. This is what people need to understand.
You need to pitch.
Mm-hmm. I pitched, you know. So I was invited, and I found out later that they just told us recently that it was 73 people. We didn't know how many people they invited.
So they narrowed it down to 10.
To 10 films, 10 projects, and 14 directors. So some films have two. So I pitched to the Disney execs during COVID and all that stuff, and eventually I was chosen among the 10 films. So I'm writing and directing the first episode, Herder Boy, Chizazi Moto, representing Uganda. So
available on Disney Plus now.
Available on Disney Plus.
That is your story is fantastic, because many people, and Maki is going to come in, many people would want to be where you are.
Mm.
You see, we live in a society now that is very social media oriented.
Mm-hmm.
People are interested in how many likes, how many views, and all those have their place. But what you've shown me is that when you use your opportune moment, we call it a Kairos moment, use it, your opportune moment, it doesn't matter how many people are subscribing to your page and so on and so forth. You just need the attention of the people that matter.
All right.
Just make sure you're remembered.
Be memorable. Eh?
Yeah, if we had time, we'll go into that canned story of John Travolta.
Because even us getting that photo was also a testimony of just being remembered.
That's it.
Hopefully we'll get that photo and show it.
My Instagram is on his Instagram as well. But like, it's funny. Like that's a very interesting.
No, actually, the reason why it has to be shown as a big deal is because people might think that, you know, we're in a room of like 150 people, but we're the only ones who got a picture with him. The guys from Uganda.
How did that happen?
And were you memorable?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so Junat, let's just summarize this story.
All right.
Because this story is, we were having a bad time at Cannes, right? We had just gotten our film in Cannes. We traveled all the way there. And I remember the first 2 days, right? Robin and I were going back to our Airbnb and saying, oh my God, nothing happened. We hadn't networked with anybody. It's overwhelming. Everyone at Cannes is trying to get their thing pitched, trying to get noticed, you know? And like, there are very few people that we're all aiming for, right? So what we did is that, like, during the, we got into one of those master classes during Cannes, and it was John Travolta there. And I remember sitting there, and the thing was almost ending. People were asking questions. Then I turned to Robin and said, I'm going to ask this guy a question. Because he kept on looking at us, right? Yeah. He kept on looking at us, right? Because yeah.
We're
the only black people in the room wearing these African shirts. And then I was like, and I noticed it. I was like, you know, if I put up my hand, this guy is going to pick me. You know,
So it's because he was with a moderator,
yes.
And the moderator chose the last question,
yes,
and it was somebody else,
yeah.
And John Travolta was like, "I want to know what those guys
have to say." Okay, because I put up my hand, and he saw me putting up my hand. The moderator said that was the last question, and so when I stood up, I stood up and I said, "I'm here with my brother. Richard Kalabandi, did my homework, Uganda, and all that stuff." And I asked my question was like, "What does it take for someone like me to get you, John Travolta? I'm from Uganda, in one of my films." It's a very audacious question.
Wow. Okay. Right?
So like that.
Wait, was that the question?
That was the question.
I like that. The question was,
even you are shocked.
No.
That was the question.
The question that you asked was, what does it take to be seated where you are?
Yeah, that was the question. Yes. Then I added I added this other part.
Yes, it was after. Yeah.
So like, it's a very audacious question to ask in a room of 150 people, 200 people actually. And so what happened was that when I sat down, I told Robin, now everybody in this room knows who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin was like, in one fell swoop, 200 people.
You know, I think the thing is, and it's hard to describe it because like when we stood up and, you know, it's asking a question, you know, I should point out how the other questions are going. It's like, yes, ma'am, do you have a question? Yes, Mr. John
Travolta.
That's
not how they speak though. You can do a normal.
Mr. John Travolta.
You should do a normal.
I see that you've done so many films. Yeah, and then people are like that. But when we stood up, the energy was different.
Mm.
It was like...
Different vibes.
Yeah, like, we're not here. We want to be where you are.
Mm.
You know, how do we get there? And so the thing is that after that...
What was his answer? I'm curious.
I remember he said, like, just if you send something, why not? You know, like, if we look at it and it's a project that's meant for me, you know, why not take it? And that also comes back to Kizazimoto. We'll come back
to
that later.
And his answer to your question about... being in his seat, he said, because for me these words really rang with me. He said, you know, if you just keep going, I mean, look around. In a single moment, you've made these people start laughing and stuff. You've captured the room. If you just keep going, you'll be in my seat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Soon enough.
Yeah, and that's
it's something that I really look at. The truth is that when we
Heard this story. So
when we left that place, the rest of the festival. Were recognized everywhere we're going.
We were just walking around.
The Ugandan brothers.
Hey, the Ugandan guys, right? Then we got a lot of contacts, a lot of networking.
So how did you get a picture with him?
So that's the thing. Like, so now that's very funny because like it's funny because like I said, let's go, right? So everyone was trying to take a picture with him, weird selfies and stuff. So like we went over there. I hope I'm not giving people like a method of doing
shit,
this.
Yeah.
You know?
There were like bouncers around him and stuff, so no one could reach him.
Yeah, so I'll tell the truncated story of this. So we went, because no one was taking a picture with the moderator. And I said, yo, man, you're on stage with John Travolta. I want to take a picture with you too, man. So we took a picture of the moderator. And the moderator was like, dude, I'll get you a picture of John Travolta.
Yeah,
you know?
Said
right? And I was like, cool. Right? So he told us to just wait out there. And this is the best part of this story. Because when the moderator came out, he waited for John Travolta to come out with these bouncers who were just pushing people away from him. And then the moderator points at us like this. And he's like, John Travolta says, and I kid you not, verbatim, my Ugandan brothers.
I gotta take a picture with my Ugandan brothers.
Okay. And I was like, then we took the picture. And like the thing is like, after that, the lesson was to Robin and I is that wherever you go, right, you have to seize that opportunity.
Be memorable. Yeah.
Seize that opportunity.
You know, he went like, hello, my name is Raymond Malinga, and I'm from Uganda. I'm here with my brother. Brother stands up and he waves.
If it was like
you know.
Yeah, it was very, very intentional. And I said, yo, we can't come all the way to Cannes and not get anything out of this, you know? So that's just a sidetrack story, sorry.
Okay, that's very... Maki, you have something to add?
No, I love that. I love that. I live for moments like that. You understand? I live for moments like that. And the reason I say that is because on many occasions, the people I've met, the people I've interacted with, there's this one... thing I usually tell them. I tell them, you need to travel. It doesn't matter. Just board a plane.
Exposure.
I tell you why. Even more than exposure, I tell you why. Because the moment you board a plane and you're in a different airport, you could just be anyone.
Ah.
Nobody knows you.
Mm.
You could just be anyone. So like you're saying, when you're there, you've come all this way. It can't just be for nothing. All these different people came from somewhere as well. Yeah. But when the opportunity and the moment presents itself, it comes down to two questions. Will you have the self-confidence or will you be intimidated by the environment and the people you see around? And for me, that's why I'm saying I love this story, because that self-confidence, it's literally what opens those doors. Mm. Because anyway, if the rest of the guys, even the ones who probably you might have thought, maybe that guy, you understand? But they are not the ones who got the attention that you got. Mm. They are not the ones who left the room with the kind of effect and impact that you did. But it's just because you were looking at yourselves, focused on what brought you here, what you guys are chasing and stuff like that. It's not about these other people.
Mm.
It was about you guys. So in that moment, you knew, you know what? It's either go big or go home, you know, and you shot for it. And so if there's something just out of that short story, even as we come to an end of this, if there's something that I'd pick out of your story and share with someone else, it would just be that. You know, have that self-confidence. Have that drive. Like, everybody on the face of this earth has something to give.
Mm.
Don't undermine what you have.
Yeah.
Don't undermine what you have.
I want to focus on Chizazi Moto for a moment, yeah? So there's a lot we could touch, but thank God you've done 1,000 interviews. You guys have done a lot of interviews as one. So I've been looking for things. I spent a lot of time listening to your interviews and trying to pick what maybe people have not asked. But this was unique because you got to work with one of the voice actors was a superstar.
Mm.
Huh? And just tell us, is a superstar. Yeah, sorry.
Florence Kasumba.
Yeah. And you had to pitch to her as well.
Like through my script, because I wrote the script and send over the script, and if she likes it, she likes it, doesn't like it, she liked it. I actually wrote the role for her, you know. So the thing is, like, I didn't think I was going to be able to get Florence Kasumba, but I wrote the role with her in mind, and I said, hey guys, wouldn't it be cool if, like, I could get the actual Florence Kasumba to do this thing? And we're like, let's try. Cool. I was like, what? Wait, what? Okay. But it was, yeah. So that's it.
Okay. So I like the fact that, so Chizazi Moto is now out.
Yep.
Okay. It's on Disney Plus.
Yep.
You wrote the first episode. Yep. You directed.
I wrote and directed
the first episode, Hardaboy. I've watched it.
Mm-hmm.
It's what, 12 minutes long?
Yeah, give or take, 11 minutes. Like 11.
What's the premise of the story?
Simply put, it's futuristic cattle herders, right? And I think that's cool. That's it. Let's leave it like that.
You're futuristic.
Yeah? Cattle herders.
Cattle herders.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there another project we should expect, but not just from you as an individual, but from Creatures Animation that is coming out anytime soon?
Right now, I think everyone can enjoy Kunda and Friends. You know, that's what's going on.
If they have kids.
if they have kids. Even if you don't have kids.
The songs are nice.
The songs are a jam, man. I find myself humming those songs like more times than I care to admit. But the thing is, I think Kunda and Friends is what we're doing right now. We have other projects in the pipeline, but as I mentioned before, we usually, our projects have objectives, you know, and when we are working on something, we wanted to achieve something. So the projects that we have, you can get excited for. We're moving to the animated series space and also like feature films, right? But we're looking for the right partners to be part of this, you know, and to take us to the next level, because we can already do a Calabar in my homework.
Right.
Now, Hardaboy has happened. Of course, with the help of Disney, Triggerfish Animation Studios. But how can we get to a point whereby Uganda can actually self-sufficiently do these things on their own? And that's what we're looking for.
Your company is obviously growing.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
It's been around for how many years?
Robin. 6 years?
We started in 2015.
So started in 2015, so it can't be 6 years, because that's when I started my ministry. So it's about 8 years now.
Okay. Huh? I think we're in our eighth year.
We're in our eighth year.
Yeah. So at some point you're going to need recruitment.
Yep.
Shout out to all the people who want to work with Raymond and Robin Malinga. Mm. What do they need to have?
Mindsets. Anyway.
What I will say is we have a simple policy in our studio, and this is what you can expect whenever you come. We'll ask you, what are you good at? You know, what aren't you good at? You know,
what do you want to do?
What do you want to do and what don't you want to do? Yeah. And we usually use that to determine who we're hiring. And also to determine, because we ask those questions because we're trying to fill a need in our studio, you know? So I would say the excuses we had back then, you know, when information and internet was bad, you know, you don't have those excuses now. So we expect people to have at least done some research. Yeah. They know what they want to do. And then so to come in with like a little bit of skill level, but we really value mindset over a lot of things.
Because I'm pitching in, because we're coming to a close and I'm just hitting some questions on
it's okay.
But who, I had to ask this question, spirituality and religion, because there is it. So we've had these discussions. We've had this discussion. So you guys don't consider yourselves religious. You consider yourselves
spiritual.
And what is spiritual to you? And what role has it played in who you are now and possibly even in creatures?
Robin, go ahead. You're the most spiritual of all of us.
Nah, for me, it's been an incredible journey because I did start out like from a very
used to play in church.
Play
guitar and all that.
Yeah, I used to play in church and I was very much a religious person. But for reasons that, you know, the story has to be shorter than that, I became more of a spiritual person than I was religious, because I feel like religious is more of a man-made thing. Mm. And spirituality is more of a spiritual thing.
Yes.
You know, so you're working on levels that are not exactly like, this man said this in the church, this man said this in the mosque.
You feel it.
Yeah. You feel things. Uh-huh. And you feel things. So like in terms of my journey and where our company is going, the work that we're doing, there's a sense of spirituality even when I'm writing and telling stories, and when I go to work, the energy that we're working with, it's like, guys, you know, the energy that we need to be in, you know, we need to be a bit positive. We need to be knowing what's around us. You know, there are people who come, and I generally believe that people have energies.
They do.
Mm. Yeah.
They do.
Yes, and they do. Places, they do. And places have energies.
Go deeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tables have been turned.
So
Robin Malinga.
Raymond Malinga.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so people, and one of the underlying factors for people who are also recruited might be also the energy that they bring.
Mm.
You know, because you can bring a negative energy into your room and it just kills everything.
True.
And people's energies bounce off of each other. People keep on telling me that I'm a very positive person, and it bounces off on other people as well. And I'm glad for that. But in the same way, I'm thinking to myself, there's a person just as powerful with their negative energy that can send it your way and can affect me as well. So, man, spirituality.
Right. Very important. I think Robin touched on what I wanted to touch on, which was energies. And I think I did start off as a dancer in church. I wasn't doing that, whatever you did, but I was dancing way better than what you just saw there. What's interesting to me is that Robin has touched on a lot, so I won't have to talk too much. But what I will say is that it is important to me that when I'm writing something, people feel something, you know? And the feeling doesn't mean I need to make you cry.
Mm-hmm.
It could be make you laugh, or it could be nostalgic, you know? But you need to feel something. And so for me, when I think about spirituality, what it means to me, what it means to a company, is that it's always a transfer of energy consistently. You know, and also weeding out the bad energy, being able to admit to yourself that, you know, I might have said something wrong, you know, and I should not say that anymore. Or I said, that was good, do more of that, you know. And that's just all it is for me. So, yeah, if you were talking about it from
So spirituality from this sense would be there is a higher awareness than...
It comes from within. It's a feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, finally a few more questions, and Maki will probably wind it up, and then we'll have that for the day. But what drives you guys? Because for some people it's money. Okay? Talking to you guys, it doesn't feel like that. What's your drive? Especially your company. Because, okay, you're somewhere where many people want to be.
Mm.
10 years from now, how do you see your company and how do you see yourselves?
There's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Robin, do you want to go first or I go first?
I know you go first.
Okay, for me, I do not want to put anyone under the delusion that money is not important. It is important. It enables you to do things, you know? But I think recently I have kind of gotten into impact, you know? And it warms my heart. Yeah, of course, a full bank account is great, you know? But it actually warms my heart when you hear like a parent saying, you know, my child has this skill and I didn't know what to do with it, right? And the parent is like, now I know what direction I can take my kid in, you know? Or a kid who is finally saying, oh, I actually, this is me. I've never felt that I had anything was made for me, you know, specifically, but this is the path I want to go on. And for me, it has become impact. So in every single thing I do, I try my best to make sure that there's a level of impact, right? Not only, I'm obviously like achieving my own personal goals, you know, but if it can mean something to somebody out there, that would be great. So for me, what drives me is that I just want to tell like some pretty cool stories that I think people would be like, oh, I learned something new today. Or
and where do you see the company 10 years from now?
Where do I see the company 10 years from now? So that has been shifting, right? But I will go back to what we said, Robin said early on in this podcast, which is that we do not view ourselves as a company that cannot be as big as any other company out there.
Okay.
Right? So in the next 10 years, we want to see significant movement from where we are, right?
Competing.
And, yeah, competing at a very large level. You know, I also want to be in a position where instead of waiting for Disney to come here to offer Kizazimoto to 10 to 14 creators, that our company can turn and say, we are the ones offering this opportunity. Exactly. So I see our company being very impactful, not only in the country, not only in the region, but the continent and the world as well.
Robin?
Your
drive, and then
the drive for me,
money.
I've the thing that drives me, I feel, keeps evolving, and I think also drives the company. It keeps evolving with time because new things, new information is added to the cart. Mm. I used cart because I couldn't think of any other word, but
basket.
Yeah, to the basket.
Is a .com like millennial whatever?
But like. Especially at the point that we are now, we're at now, I feel like a window and a door has been opened for us to actually do something really good for the people of this country and Africa and Black people everywhere. Because you look at it with Kizazimoto, a lot of eyeballs fall on us from across the world. And we have the opportunity to help so many people.
You've set the standard, you guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that right now, there's an opportunity for more stories to be told. Mm. You know, more, with the impact that this Kizazimoto project is having, it means that there's going to be a hunger. We did know there was a hunger for such content out there. But now, the fact that it exists, I'm like, we look at the position Creatures is in. We can get more artists on. I don't know. We'll help. And animation is, Raymond keeps saying, animation is a medium that helps so many artists.
True.
It helps, you know, guys who draw, guys who write.
Needs all of them to work.
Needs everybody. In a way, you also need musicians. You need voice actors. You need what? So the thing is that we're in a position that we'll be able to take a number of people with us.
Mm.
And I look at it, so that drives me. I'm like, if we do it right and we do it well, we can help and impact so many people. Speaking about impact, we can actually make a significant change in the industry, an industry that's in its infancy. We can actually move it forward, and I'm excited to see that happen.
Maki?
Nice. Yeah. I'll just say this, and if you could just answer it in less than 2 minutes so that he can wrap up, that would be amazing. It's the final one. Based on what you've just said, what you guys have shared, if someone else was watching you or someone who aspires to be like you guys, someone would easily think you guys are at the top. And we know in Uganda here we have a very poor mindset of arrivism. You know, I just wanted you to touch that in terms of mentors. Did you have mentors? Do you have mentors? And moving forward, even with the level where you've reached, do you think you still need mentors?
That's a quick one.
I don't know.
I have not had a mentor as yet. I am actively looking for one because, you know, to get to another level, you need to be. So what I use as my mentorship really is just gathering as much information as I can from people who know more about me. It might be Raymond. It might be somebody that, you know, their friends that I speak to who own their own companies, who are much ahead of the game. So in a way, they are mentors.
Yeah.
But like, just gathering as much information as you can. I will mention this simply because I feel like it's important. It takes humility to be able to listen and accept and learn from somebody. And it's also part of the culture that's in our studio right now.
Awesome.
So
awesome. Yeah, that's good. And I'll add, it also takes a lot of arrogance to believe that you can do something like this in this country. And together, we call it audacity.
Yeah.
So basically, it takes a lot of audacity to think the way we think.
Yeah.
And that's the culture of the studio. I would say, like, I have mentors, you know. And the way I operate with my mentors is that I don't even talk to them that much, because one session with them nourishes me for probably 3 years or 2 years, you know. Nice. But my job whenever I'm working is to simply make sure that the next time I talk to one of my mentors, I'm in a different position than I was before.
Yeah.
Before. That's all I try to do. And arrivism, we don't have that in the studio because we always think about
growing
and what we're going to do next before you guys even see what we have, right? So we don't have that. And what I will say is that the model that we are building in the studio is, I came back with all this knowledge from Malaysia. We had some skilled people. We organized it into a company. I started saying, you're better than me at drawing, you do the drawing. You're better than me at this, you do it, you know? So the culture we have is that we have mentors. A mentor trains people, and I'm expecting the next batch, it will be my people to train those people. And that's what we're doing.
Awesome.
I'd like to thank you guys because you're the very definition of people I've seen perfect your skill from the time you were young up to now. And I would tell everyone who has been listening in, take time to watch Akalamanda Eat My Homework. Mm-hmm. If you haven't already, watch Kizazi Moto.
Episode 1 is Herder Boy representing Uganda, which is really cool.
Okay. Yeah, make sure you watch that. And we'll be looking for any further links because they're on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kunda and Friends.
Watch Kunda and Friends.
Yeah.
Well, looking for any other projects that you might have and visit your website. What's your website?
Creatures.africa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creatures.africa.
Yeah.
All right. You said you're going to change your name, so we'll look out for that as well. But thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having
us. I know there's a lot of things that could have discussed.
What's funny about this stuff is that, like, this is a typical day in the Malinga household.
Yeah. We talk about
this. We're just now being recorded.
Yes.
That's all that's changed. When Ronald comes, if Ronald, we ever do a podcast with Ronald, you just see how it is. Because we just talk to each other like this all the time.
Yeah.
And these guys are very knowledgeable. My co-host, Afimani McLean, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, see you next time.